This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us in studio today are Jeff Herzog, Project Manager for the Honolulu District U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Robert Kroning is the Director of the city's Department of Design and Construction, and Sean Connolly is our Community Voice. He's an architect, author of Hawaii Futures, out of which the Alawai Centennial Project was born. Welcome to you all.
Thank you, Catherine.
Thanks so much for carving time out. Now, you know, today we're talking about the Alawai Canal Flood Project and concern about the proposed basins that may mean condemning private property. It's in advance of a Tuesday town hall meeting that takes place at the gym at the Manoa Valley District Park and starts at 6:30 p.m. You know, Jeff, can you start off for our listeners? Give us the bird's eye view of the project. Why is this project so critical? And how did the funding get moved up for this?
Sure, Catherine. Good morning, and thank you for having me this morning. In order to look at the bird's eye view of the project, we need to go back all the way to 1998 when there was a reconnaissance study at the request of the DLNR to the Corps of Engineers Honolulu District to look at the entire watershed. And that study evaluated ecosystem restoration as well as flood control. And then an additional study at the request of a state senator at the time in 2001 evaluated specifically the Alawai Canal. And the Alawai Canal study was a technical assistance study, and the result of that study led to the feasibility study that occurred from 2001 all the way up until 2017. In 2012, there was a shift in the way the Corps of Engineers operated doing their planning studies, and Congress directed that the Corps of Engineers evaluate its ongoing studies and look at bringing them to a timely conclusion. So in 2012, the Corps of Engineers met with stakeholders, met with the City and County of Honolulu, as well as its sponsor at the time, DLNR, and evaluated the Alawai feasibility study and determined to focus on the flood control elements in order to bring it to a timely conclusion within the new congressionally directed three-year window. In 2017, that feasibility study did come to a conclusion with a feasibility study and an integrated feasibility report. And the Chief of Engineers, General Semonite, signed the Chief's report, which is a summary of the feasibility study, and submitted it to Congress for consideration for authorization and funding. In order for a project to move forward, it's important to understand that you need three pieces. You need the congressional authorization, you need the funding, but then you need a partner, because the Corps of Engineers, we do not operate unilaterally on these feasibility studies. We operate with a sponsor is what we refer to them, but really what they are, they're a non-federal partner. In February of 2018, the Corps of Engineers, just like Congress, we're all learning organizations, and we're always looking for ways to become more efficient and to do things more appropriate and faster. Congress passed what was called the Bipartisan Budget Act, and part of that was the Long-Term Disaster Recovery Investment Program, in which the criteria was if a feasibility study had been completed, a chief's report signed, an EIS completed, and there had been a declared emergency for flood control or flood issues over the past 2 years, then it became eligible for this program. And part of that program was Congress, once the project designed, constructed, or if it's a study, completed in time so that it can be in place to protect against the next storm. The modeling shows, the trends show, climate change, sea level rise, all of these things are impacting our environment. So Congress authorized the $345 million for us to move forward, provided that we have a non-federal sponsor. So from August of 2018 and still ongoing, we're working with the City and County of Honolulu as well as the DLNR and the state to determine what is the path forward for this project. And this project is an integrated system. It's not just one or two flood control elements.
Right, it's complicated.
It's very complicated.
And we should mention that we did invite the Department of Land and Natural Resources to come to the table. They declined. So, Robert, you're here as one of the partners. Talk about the cost sharing, right? Because the city can't do this by itself.
No, Catherine, certainly not. When the project, as Jeff had mentioned, focused a lot more on flood control, the DLNR, who was the non-federal sponsor for the initial feasibility studies and so forth, realized that being a flood control type project, the city and county should be a lot more involved than it had been in the study phase. And so we started working with them to determine how we were going to go through this project together. And what we've decided is that the state will take on the capital costs of the project, and that the city and county has agreed to take on the operations and maintenance of the project once completed. In addition, the city will also be responsible for acquiring any lands that we may need to acquire if that's what needs to happen for this project.
Right, and DLNR normally handles, I believe, like the dredging of the canal, which, you know, has had to be done in the past, just because of the silt that it kind of accumulates in the canal. And Sean, you've been studying the Alawai because the Alawai turns 100 years in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Alawai Canal was built in 1921, and it took about 7 to 8 years to complete. And so in 2021, 2 years from now, the Alawai Canal turns 100. And the idea of the Alawai Centennial was born from the fact that whatever we do for the next 7 years with the Alawai Canal will affect the next 100 years of Hawaii's history. It's that big of a project because, as we know, the Alawai Canal basically was the piece of infrastructure that created Waikiki, our economic engine, as you mentioned earlier. In terms of the centennial, there are at least two major things that this website, alawaicentennial.org, portrays, which is, number one, the Alawai Canal was never completed. When it was initially constructed, it wasn't built with the proper tidal controls, pumps, or locks typically associated with canals at that time in the 1920s. And also the Alawai Canal reflects the racism and white supremacy of its time of construction, which is still, unfortunately, in effect today around the world. You have a history where when the canal was constructed, the wetlands above the canal, what became the canal, were cultivated by Hawaiians and farmers of color that were referred to as swamp. And then when you look at the actual Alawai plan set forth by the Army Corps, in terms of the terminology, the way the Army Corps is treating water is the way the federal government treats people. You have a wall at the canal and detention basins, uplands. And so people can see the bigger picture happening where, you know, at the federal level, you have walls to keep immigrants out, and you have detention centers. There's a much bigger thing happening here than just flood control and just climate action. It's also really, we're at this critical point in humanity where we have to really address the past 100 years of trauma that has been occurring here in many ways with the Alawai Canal.
Now, some folks are looking at this and are saying, we just want to save Waikiki. That's the golden goose. And if we're talking about sea level rise and climate change, that something's got to be done to prevent catastrophic flooding in that area. How are we looking at that just as far as the funding component? Robert, I know there's some folks that say, well, where's the visitor industry? Where's the Waikiki Improvement Association in all of this?
So those agencies have we've been coordinating with them in addition to the state reps and the Corps of Engineers on the development of this project to see if there's any types of additional funding that might be able to help, especially with the operations and the maintenance of it long term. But there's nothing been finalized yet. This is still a flood control project for right now.
Okay, and we did talk to one of the property owners who stands to lose his land in Palolo. for one of the detention basins up in the valley. Dave Watase is a civil engineer who questions whether this current plan is the best approach to the flood control issue. He believes that the methodology for this current plan is flawed. He prefers the alternative of installing pumps in the canal that he says were early on was rejected by the Corps early on in the process. And he believes that the data that's being used is faulty.
You know, it doesn't matter how great of a computer program you have. You know, it can be a supercomputer for all you know. The results are only going to be as good as the information that you put into it. So I studied that, and what I found out was, example, on the rain gauge stations, you know, there's 13 of them that they used. In areas that they were lacking rain gauge stations, they interpolate. And the other thing is half the stations do daily readings, and you can't develop what they call critical flows using daily measurements. And a typical example from a layman is, you know, getting 6 inches of rain in half an hour versus six inches of rain in 24 hours is a big difference. You know, they also don't factor into things like the time of year, whether it was daytime or nighttime, you know, because if it's a nice hot day and it's 92 degrees and it rains, you know, a lot of that rain is just going to hit the ground and evaporate. They even admit that the programs that they use are not designed to take into account the topography of Hawaii, you know, like the mountains. So really, it's probably a program designed to work in Kansas or something where it's flat or hilly, but not mountainous like in what we experience here. And, you know, I think there's different ways of doing detention if absolutely necessary, that they can put it like underground, you know, where it won't be just a big open pit and collecting, you know, silt and everything else and be a potential danger for getting clogged and maybe breached, you know, and then everybody downstream, you know, is at risk.
That was Dave Watase, and he covers a lot of ground there. do you want to address some of those issues, Jeff? You know, so he believes that the methodology and the data is flawed.
Sure. Let me start by saying it's important that we have individuals like Dave Watase out there, concerned citizens who want to be part of the process, because with those individuals participating in the process, then we have the ability to make sure that we put forth a project that protects the community, the infrastructure, and the economy. When it comes to the actual engineering, let me put out there that the Corps of Engineers, one of our missions is to develop answers to some of the nation's and the world's toughest engineering problems. Communities, states, nations come to the Corps of Engineers for assistance when it comes to developing these. And the modeling that we use, the engineering that we use, for example, we have several checks and balances. It's not just the Honolulu district that develops this engineering, puts it forward, and then it's accepted. Specifically for this study, it went through the district. It went through experts from across the nation for a concurrent review. It went through our headquarters engineering review. It even went through an external review to the Corps of Engineers, in which we hired an external entity to review. So it's not that we just did a unilateral modeling and put it forth. To refer to the pump stations and the ideas of flood walls and only protecting Waikiki. So in 2001, we did that technical assistance study, and as a result of that study, they did come up with a recommendation if we were only looking to protect Waikiki. And that would include flood walls and flood walls varying in heights. And this is in the technical assistance reports from 1 foot all the way up to 18 feet if we were looking only to protect Waikiki. But that would only protect Waikiki, and it would do nothing for the residents in that urban area, which 2004, the Manoa flood, 2006, McCully, Mo'i'ili. Those floods impacted above Waikiki. So what we're looking at proposing in this feasibility study and moving forward in this project is to integrate a system. In fact, we brought folks over from the New Orleans and the Hurricane Disaster project over there, where it's an integrated system, and we're incorporating a lot of their ideas into this project so that it is from the top of the watershed down into Waikiki, some level of protection for all of the residences. So prime example, Robert and I had the privilege of meeting with the principal of Hokulani Elementary School so that we could take into consideration some of her design concerns and some of her concerns with that detention basin, because the flood insurance rate maps and our modeling both show that that area during a low probability but high impact event will flood. So if we can create a natural berm around that current Kanawai Community Park baseball field to slow that water down, then it offers protection not only to Hokulani Elementary, but also to the surrounding residences, as well as it slows the water down so that by the time it reaches the canal, it can make its way out to the ocean and have not 18-foot flood walls. In response to the idea of the pump stations, and I will tell you that part of this project will incorporate some level of pump stations. However, at a peak storm event, we're talking about in the vicinity of 20,000 cubic feet per second flow coming out of the Alawai Canal. In New Orleans, they have what's called the West Closure Complex, and that pump station pumps 19,000 cubic feet per second. It is the second largest pump station in the world, and the footprint and the requirements for that are astronomical. So to put a single pump station or a pump station and just flood walls, while it may protect Waikiki, it's not the integrated system necessary so that we don't have another instance similar to 2004 where it caused over $86 million in damage to the university. So again, I just want to reiterate the fact that the folks Mr. Watase and the principal at Hokulani Elementary School and the folks who are going to show up tomorrow night, we encourage that because it's only with their input and participation that will we be able to put together a truly integrated system in order to protect Waikiki and the upland residential areas.
And Hokulani's not the only school in that area. You've got Iolani, you've got the Alawai. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to chime in here, Sean?
Yeah, actually, within the watershed that serviced by the Alawai Canal, you actually have every major private school institution in the state located in this area. And so it's a very big deal because we're also talking about protecting the livelihoods and safety of children going to school in these areas. However, with regards to what Dave Watase was saying and what Army Corps is mentioning about, the flood intervention above Hokulani School, Dave specifically talking about detention basins that are being built on currently owned properties upland that require eminent domain versus other alternatives such as eliminating the concept of flood detention and instead promoting the more nuanced idea of flood parks, which have been integrated around the world from Singapore to Boston. Building those in already open spaces such as Manoa Valley District Park and Palolo Valley District Park, which the Army Corps sort of rejected in one of the plans. In terms of the pumps, the Army Corps rejected the plan for a pump that didn't include locks or fish passes or there are these kind of interventions. And while you're mentioning some of the interventions in New Orleans, I think a better example is the Charles River Dam, which pumps, 8,000, almost 2 billion cubic feet per minute. That's been in operation since 1978, which also has locks. And so there are, when you look at the flood wall that's being proposed around the canal, it's just a wall, and you have over 50 stormwater connections going beneath the wall. I can't imagine it being energy efficient to have pumps along each of those stormwater conduits when it comes to storm surge. And anyway, it's definitely a complicated infrastructure project that no one's against flood control, but in terms of how it's being implemented, I think, is a major concern for the community.
And Robert, can you talk about the maintenance? Because, you know, right now when in advance of heavy rain, the city has to go out and clear, you know, the drainage canals, the storm drains, make sure that, you know, we're not going to create some flash flooding issues for the urban core. Dave Watase mentioned detention basins underground. I mean, I don't know, is that possible? How does that work? Because he says there's a concern that if you have these open basins, if they do get clogged with debris, that it might cause flooding for some of the surrounding areas.
Right. So the detention basin underground, I think, is somewhat someone made a recommendation about a parking garage under the golf course. And based on the water tables and so forth, that doesn't really make sense.
Mm-hmm.
The entire integrated system clearly is going to require maintenance, and so we'll have to budget for that every year. And as we mentioned before, we've been working with several different organizations around Waikiki to help fund some of that, to help provide some assistance with maintaining portions of the flood control system. But in the end, it's a city responsibility, and we have to make sure it gets done. So the Department of Facility Maintenance is required to do that, and on all city lands, and they'll fund and make sure that that's done. They also have an ability, because one of the problems that's happened over, and we've realized a lot more recently, is a lot of these streams go through private lands, and so recently we've passed an ordinance that allows the Department of Facility Maintenance to have a little more authority in making sure that those private lands are also clear debris, so that it doesn't get down to the to cause problems at bridges and so forth. Part of the design that the Corps of Engineers has presented emplaces several debris catchment type structures, which will also help prevent any blockage of flow as it comes down to better retain the water in the detention basins that it's designing. Now we fully understand that this may not be the perfect solution. In fact, for anybody to even think that we would ever get to a perfect solution, it's impossible. The amount of money and time you'd have to put to it, and probably never get there anyway. You're going to have all kinds of different ideas, different people thinking that something different can be done. One of the great things about the EIS process is that all that feedback can be provided. And so that was done. And like Jeff was mentioning, we've taken what Mr. Watase has said, plus many other people who've provided input, and we analyze it. We take it into consideration. And if it's a... something that should be done, if we agree that, yes, we missed this or that it's a better idea for the project, certainly take that into consideration and implement it. But in the end, you know, a decision has to be made on what the final product is going to be. And we at the city feel confident that what's presented right now, at the stage it is, because it's a 30-35% stage, is the best solution going forward. We understand there may be minor tweaks to it, because mm-hmm. there still has to be some adjustments, some analysis going on. But for what the project is right now, we're very comfortable that this is the best solution going forward.
We have a couple of calls on the line. Wendy from Honolulu, what's your question?
Hi. I have a couple of suggestions. I know you've addressed some of them, but you know, you just spoke about somebody suggesting to build underground. They do that in Washington, D.C. now, and it is not difficult. You can do it. I also, frankly, don't agree that the water table is as close to the water, as close to the surface as you say. My other suggestion, I have a suggestion. First of all, dredge the Alawai Canal. Take it and dredge it the way it's supposed to be. Keep it dredged. Because a lot of the problems with the water and the flooding is the fact that it's completely silted up, and I think that some of the water problems are caused by that. In addition to clearing out the front of the harbor, I think that that's a real good first start. And I do believe, and the other suggestion would be that, you know, we don't want to end up like Houston, where all of our water doesn't go in and ends up in places where it shouldn't be. And I know that this project is trying to attempt to not have that happen. But there are other alternatives to, you know, building these concrete lines, even with basins and things of that nature, that can quite often not work.
Okay. Thank you for that, Wendy. Jeff, you want to address this? You know, she raises some good points.
Sure. Again, thank you, Wendy, for calling in and making your suggestions and asking questions. I'll start with the underground and Washington, D.C. So as part of our feasibility study, we were discussing earlier, the Corps of Engineers started incorporating sea level rise into our feasibility planning process. And so over the next 50 years, we estimate about 2.5 feet of sea level rise. Is that spot on accurate? Absolutely not. There is no answer because we just don't actually know. But the Corps of Engineers has developed regulations and processes and calculators for calculating where we will determine for our planning processes. So 2.5 feet over 50 years. And then 3.75 feet by the time 2125 is the date on that. So in order to develop those underground detention basins, whether you think the water table is there now, the question is, will the water table be there in a sufficient time for that feature to be appropriate? Now, the next question as far as dredging the canal. So the state of Hawaii and DLNR is actually looking at a project to dredge the canal. Separate from this, again, dredging the canal might help with the Waikiki problem, but it doesn't necessarily incorporate sea level rise, and it certainly doesn't provide the protection for upstream. And I totally agree, and thank you, Wendy, for bringing up, we don't want to end up in a situation as they did in Houston, after Hurricane Michael, in Puerto Rico, in Florida. That's the Congress has charged us and the Corps of Engineers has charged the Honolulu District with getting this project designed and constructed in a timely manner to provide protection against the next storm. But there is one piece that, there's a lot of information going out there, and I want to make sure that this is clear, is that where we can, we are engineering with nature. All of these debris and detention basins in these upstream areas, they are actually armored using large armor stone, earthen berms. The concrete is at the spillway so that in the event that there is a maximum flood beyond what we could even consider, that it would overtop and then it would flow down without destroying that berm. But the berm is actually earthen berm, and it's not concrete line channels. The concrete that a lot of people are concerned with and that we're addressing with is really down at the canal and that flood wall. And the need for that is strictly based off of space constraints. The Corps of Engineers would much prefer to build a levee there, but due to the space constraints with the existing canal and Waikiki infrastructure, it's the congressionally authorized feature and the engineering feature was a flood wall.
Well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. The Alawai Canal is our focus today. You can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Coming up on the next On Point, is owning a home still the American dream? We'll take a look around the country at the pros and cons of renting versus buying. It's part three of our special series, Where We Call Home. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 2. Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Dr. Rohinton Patel, located in Hawaii Kai Town Center. CT-guided dental implants and conscious sedation anesthesiology available. HawaiiPacificDental.com.
We have a couple of calls in the queue. Wendy from Hilo, what's on your mind?
Good morning. It's Mindy from Hilo, and Mindy, Thank you so much for being on my favorite Hawaii Public Radio program. I just have a quick comment. Methane is 23 times higher in effect than CO2 on the greenhouse gas. If you haven't already, will you please ask the Corps of Engineers to include methane emissions with their sea level rise estimates?
Okay, well, you just did.
Because it's coming out of the permaculture and the oceans.
Jeff?
Mindy, thank you for that, and I will gladly take that and push that forward up through our chain of command. We have environmental experts and groups and think tanks working specifically on climate change and sea level rise. So comments like that are important for us to pass forward, and I certainly will.
You know, and one of the callers talked about the issue of dredging, you know, and DLNR, you know, has done this in the past, and they're planning to do it again. But Robert, you want to chime in on this?
Yes, thank you. So one of the reasons we're having this meeting tomorrow night at the Manoa District Park is to help also shed light on some misconceptions it seems a lot of people have. One of them, there's been a lot of comments about dredging the canal, thinking that that's going to help with the flood control problem. And in reality, it doesn't. It's good that DLNR is going to dredge it, and of course there's a need to do that to keep the flow of water and the sediments moving out to the ocean. But the canal itself is tidally influenced. And so the top level, the surface water of the canal acts as the bottom of the basin that is being created by the flood walls. And so it doesn't really matter how deep the canal is dredged. It's the surface water that really sets the elevation of the design factor of where how much water we're going to be able to detain in that flood wall system. Additionally, the concrete concern, we are working with the Corps of Engineers, and they've been very receptive to trying to reduce as much concrete as possible. Right now, there's nothing in the project that we see where we're going to concrete line any channel, any stream, any part of this system, other than, like you said, the spillways at some of the detention basins, which is a very small piece of the overall project. The detention basins themselves will be quite green. And the wall itself is basically the thickness of the wall is the amount of additional concrete that's going to be added from a bird's eye view. So we at the city are also very much concerned about, you know, hardening of the terrain and just, you know, making it worse, like the problems that were caused in Houston. So we're keeping an eye on that and making sure that it's as reduced as possible.
Sean?
Sarah, yeah, I have to jump in a little bit because I don't want the audience to get confused. The city's correct when you mentioned that the surface level of the canal is sort of this like datum point. But building a wall is not going to lower that datum point. And so having instead an intervention like a pump and lock system would allow you to effectively lower the water level of the canal so that the stormwater drains servicing the surrounding neighborhoods can still evacuate water. Right now, those storm drains essentially enter into the canal. You can build the wall. The water is still not going to be able to drain into the canal. So the wall itself is just as effective as dredging in terms of sea level rise. Both of them will not do anything for sea level rise. In terms of some of the other things, the city has been calling this an integrated system. This is not an integrated system. An example of an integrated system is one that is one like the Ahupa'a and the Lo'i and Kalo system that and the local EIA systems that we used to have in place here, where flood control also feeds people. This project doesn't feed anybody. It's not integrated. It doesn't increase the resilience of this place whatsoever. And then in terms of the comments about the upland detention basins being ecological, if you look at the map on what streams are channelized and what not, a lot of these detention basins are actually occurring in streams that are currently not channelized, and they're the few of the natural streams that are left. And it just seems absurd to go in and re-engineer those pristine streams that we have left. And so I just had to mention those three things because I don't want the audience to get confused.
And then what about the parks or the green space that we do have, you know, like the golf course, you know, or Manoa District Park, or, you know, don't those act just as natural retention basins, if you will?
They do, and actually, where we are able with this project, we're taking advantage of those. The Alawai Golf Course will become a detention basin. We will elevate the cart path on a reinforced green levee with the cart path on top so that the floodwater goes there. Kanawai Community Park is another example. We even looked at that up in Palolo Valley, the district park up there. The problem is that park is already well elevated above the stream. And so while there are no features in the upper areas, the topography and the engineering up in Waimau and Pukeli is such that as it gets down towards the St. Louis neighborhoods, the water leaves the channel. And in order to protect those neighborhoods, there is a need to slow that water down. So there was no feasible way to create a detention basin at Palolo Valley District Park because it's already well elevated above the stream bed.
Now, the state owns a lot of land, you know, way up in these areas that we're talking about. Why can't we use state land?
So where we can, we are up in the Manoa Valley. However, for example, in Waimau, up above Waimau Road with the conservation land up there, that area tends to flatten out. And so in order to reduce the flows downstream in a sufficient manner, you have to be able to catch and slow down a certain amount of water. So to put it up there, then you're losing the topography. That is, once you hit Waimau Road, if anyone's ever been up there and the residents are well aware, it's a very steep, very fast pace, and it's a very constricted between the road system and between the homes and the residential areas. So while we agree that it's important for us to take advantage of the natural open spaces, we are where we can, and unfortunately in some areas so far. Now, let me make this quite clear, is we have not requested any rights of entry, and we have not finalized our designs. Community and state leaders have charged us with minimizing and impacts to these private lands. And so we are truly, with updated modeling and updated designs and bringing in experts, trying to move these basins up and downstream to even further minimize the impacts. Because right now, under the conceptual feasibility plan, we have identified there would be four parcels required for purchase and negotiation from the city and county to those residences.
Okay, we have another call coming in. Sydney from Kalihi.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me on. I have four questions. The first is, I've seen a paper by the Alawai Watershed Collaborative who worked with the Army Corps Engineers, and the second page model on that shows that the neighborhoods of Makiki, McCully, Mo'ili'ili, and parts of Kapahulu still flood. And they just said earlier in the program that it's the area that doesn't flood is Waikiki. The second is the safety of the houses in the upstream basins in those neighborhoods. They're going to be living directly below these earthenware basins, which are actually very dangerous types of dams if you go online and you research them. And if they're not properly maintained, which is going to be done by the city, and no disrespect to the city, but they really are kind of overwhelmed with current infrastructure projects. You could look at the Waimau Road and Kuahia Place is a project that's been 12 years in the making. The road is collapsing because the city has ignored it. And then also the Woodlawn flood is a 25-year flood, according to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, yet that only flooded the Manoa area, and it's more, but their flood modeling for 10 years shows all of the upstream areas, as well as Waikiki, vastly flooded on their 10-year model. So I think there are some serious issues with this project. You know, everybody agrees we do need flood retention, but they could put in the pump, take care of Waikiki, and then turn to more eco-friendly areas upstream. Thank you.
You know, in Sydney, I know you're from Kalihi, and we all saw how we had those recent storms where the storm drains were overrun, and we had water on the freeways, which was really pretty incredible. I think and that was just a rain bomb. It wasn't a sea level rise. You want to chime in here?
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think like everyone knows that street in Mapunapuna by U-Haul gets immensely flooded, and a lot of times that gets cited as sea level rise, but actually it's because the stormwater drain is submerged at the endpoint, so it actually can't drain, which will be exacerbated by sea level rise. And to Cindy's point about the earthen dams, I think everyone in Honolulu can relate to what happened in Nu'uanu That dam had to be pumped, and this is essentially very similar in intervention, where when you look at the maps of where the detention basins are being built outside of the floodplains upland, it actually increases over time the flood risk to the houses surrounding it, especially if climate change is going to be increasing the amount of rain. We can expect that in the future these detention basins will overflow.
You know, Robert, all I can think of is city's got like one big headache on their hands. I mean, my gosh, between, you know, the stormwater system and rising sea level and having to deal with raising the roads, or, I mean, it one big headache.
It's a challenge. And I think what I mentioned before about that ordinance that the Department of Facility Maintenance now has to help enforce some of the stream maintenance and stuff is definitely going to help with us tackling the problem of and the concern of the maintenance, which a lot of people have. One of the other things I think is a little bit of a misconception people have is that once these detention basins are completed, that they're going to be filled with water. And in the end, the only time they'll ever have any water behind them is during a huge flood. I'm not sure what the actual amount is, 25-year or 50-year flood or something like that, before it even starts to back up water. Other than that, you won't notice a single change in the stream. It's going to go right through the culvert system that goes through the detention basin and continues on naturally. So as far as the safety, there's also, I think, exaggerated fear about, you know, earthen dams not being safe. They are extremely safe. We have them all over the world. And they do very well. So the minuscule risk that's added by somehow a possible huge flood happening, filling up behind the detention basin, and the detention basin failing, I think is certainly worth the benefit that this whole project creates, where I think in the end it's a 20% reduction in the current expected flood that we have now. And it's true that the caller recently mentioned that there's still some flooding. And yes, this project does not alleviate every single square inch of flooding, but it reduces it significantly. And I think the numbers are 20%.
I was surprised to learn during our last show that the neighborhoods on the other side of the Alawai are actually lower than Waikiki. You want to talk about that, Jeff?
Yeah. So, Sydney, thank you for calling and bringing that to everyone's attention, because like Robert said, there's still going to be some residual flooding, specifically down in the Makiki area, I think, is where a lot of that residual flooding is. And the fact is, and I don't disagree with Sean on this, is that over the last 100 years, developers and entities have been channelizing this water and putting these concrete channels in there. And what's happened, especially in the Makiki area, it's created a very difficult interior drainage problem to handle. And the fact that Makiki does sit lower, it does create some residual flooding risks in that area that this project didn't address because of the scope and the type of flooding that it is. However, I will tell you that as part of this project, there's an early warning system incorporated into the project. Now, what does that system look like? Until the project's designed and constructed, we can't develop a good warning system. But that in and of itself will provide the folks down in that area with an additional safety element. And as far as the dam safety concerns, Sydney, thank you for bringing that up and mentioning even the Nuuanu, Sean, for bringing that up. But I will tell you that the U.S. Army Dam Safety Center is involved in designing this project, and we have to meet their criteria. We have to meet the federal dam safety criteria as well as the state dam safety criteria. So there will be significant review of this project when and if it moves forward from a safety impact, because the purpose of the project is to protect the people, not to increase the risk on the people.
And the bottom line is we can't not do anything. Right. I mean, I know our studios here where we're at on Kaheka Street, you know, when we saw the Makiki floods, it's just like, wow, it stopped, a couple streets away. But, you know, we could be drowning down here.
No, I think that's a good point. I mean, we can all agree that we want flood control and that we need to protect this place. But I think part of the idea of flood control involves a paradigm shift. We have this sort of outdated paradigm shift that is sort of embedded in the current plan, which is how do we keep water out, versus the more nuanced paradigm shift in terms of how do we work with water and flood control is, it's not about keeping the water out, it's how do we evacuate the water as quickly as possible during a flood event. And that involves retrofitting our storm drainage system, that involves retrofitting our streams so that they also filter the water, and that includes how do we actually lower the water level of the Olowai Canal. That's not going to be achieved through walls and detention basins. It's going to involve a different type of infrastructural approach that needs to be revisited in terms of this plan, so that we can actually achieve what we want, which is flood control and public health and safety.
Robert?
No, I'm glad you brought that up, Sean. That's fantastic. And this doesn't even have to do with the flood control project that we're talking about now, but the city is going to great lengths to change the way we handle water throughout the whole island. In fact, I mean, it's a standard now that any kind of development has to maintain water on their own property. So we are getting away from sending water out and sending it into streams and drainage pipes and out to the ocean as fast as possible. We are mandating that it needs to be managed within the property itself. So that has several benefits. One is it reduces the amount that does go into the drainage systems and flood control systems, so the chances of them ever exceeding capacity are lowered. But it also helps filtrate that water back into the water system. And so it's reusable.
Right, and whether you're the airport or the University of Hawaii or Ala Moana Shopping Center that has a lot of paved over area, that's all part of this, I guess, awareness that everybody's got to have about where does that water go.
Exactly, and so things like that we're working to require or at least encourage a lot more use of pervious pavements and pavers and things like that at the Alawai Golf Course. We just repaved that parking lot, and a significant section of that is now done with pavers and has a swale to help manage the water flow.
We do have Dave Butase on the line. Good morning, Dave.
Hi, Catherine. I wanted to make one comment that the Army Corps made. They're saying that it needs to be an integrated system, and they also need to protect the valleys, people upstream. Palolo Valley, according to their damage chart, shows that there's really no damage or need for flood protection in the valley. There's about $3 million of damage, and it basically centers around PAL1, and that's near the confluence of Palolo Stream and Manoa, which is a little bit below Kaneohe Park.
Jeff, what is PAL1?
PAL1?
It's a sub area, but it's below City Mill, near Kaneohe.
And your point is, though, what, Dave?
Well, their chart shows no damage in the upstream area.
Okay.
So why do we need, in Palolo Valley, two huge detention basins? And then the other thing, there is a way to use Palolo District Park. I mean, we can go underground, and we can lower the elevation of the detention basins to match or intercept the water further upstream.
Jeff, you want to take that?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and I look forward to talking with you again tomorrow night. His comments about Palolo District Park were certainly evaluated during the feasibility study. However, and it might be possible with his alternative. However, the federal interest, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, can only do so much, and we have to select alternatives that are both economically justified as well as environmentally compliant. And so the features that were authorized and determined up in that area were the two detention basins. And I don't disagree with Dave that where he's at on Waimau Road and over in Ipule Way up in the Pukeli neighborhoods, that they don't necessarily see the flooding there. It's reducing the downstream flows and downstream impacts to protect that infrastructure down there in the, as he mentioned, down by the confluence. Those are the areas that we are looking to reduce the impacts of flooding and the water leaving the channels. And in order to do that, the modeling and the engineering and the topography show that that's what drove for those detention basins.
Okay, we've got about a minute left. Any final thoughts, either of you here?
I would just like to invite the listener to visit Alawai Centennial online at www.alawaicentennial.org.
Robert?
We're just happy to be part of this project, and we fully support it, and are looking forward to the next 70% design.
Okay, so you'll be there at the meeting tomorrow?
I will.
Okay, and DLNR?
DLNR,
I hope, will be as well?
They will be.
Any final thoughts of how the meeting is going to go tomorrow?
As far as how the meeting goes, we hope that it's a full house, and we hope that folks take advantage of this opportunity to come out and hear from us, the partners on this project, where we are at in the project and the purpose for the features behind the project. We want them to stay engaged, and we want their feedback so that we can develop this project to protect the people, the economy, and the infrastructure here in Honolulu and in Waikiki.
Okay, so one meeting tomorrow. You think there'll be another town meeting scheduled at some point?
Oh, there will be an extensive communication process, and I understand that people feel like they weren't included in the original process, and we're not here to argue that point. But I will tell you that moving forward, the way we operate is in a transparent means in order to develop this project.
Okay. All right. Well, we'd like to thank our guests, Sean Connolly, Robert Croning, and Jeff Herzog, who is the project manager for the Army Corps of Engineers. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. If your call didn't make it on the air, contact the talkback line at 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.